Chapter 7 The Way Out of the Mountains. The way down out of the mountains was hard, but the lower they went, the less Perrin needed his fur-lined cloak. Hour by hour they rode out of the tailings of winter and into the first days of spring. The last remnants of snow vanished, and grasses and wildflowers, white maiden's hope and pink jump-up, began to cover the high meadows they crossed. Trees appeared more often, with more leaves, and grasslarks and robins sang in the branches. And there were wolves. Never in sight, not even Lan mentioned seeing one, but Perrin knew. He kept his mind firmly closed to them, yet now and again a featherlight tickle at the back of his mind reminded him they were there. Lan spent most of his time scouting their path on his black warhorse Mondarb, following Rand's tracks as the rest of them followed the signs the water left for them. An arrow of stones laid on the ground, or one lightly scratched in the rock wall of a forking pass. Turn this way, cross that saddle pass, take this switchback, this deer trail, this way through the trees and down along a narrow stream, even though there is nothing to indicate anyone has ever gone that way before. Nothing but land signs. A tuft of grass or weeds tied one way to say bare left, another for bare right. A bent branch. A pile of pebbles for a rough climb ahead. Two leaves caught on a thorn for a steep descent. The water had 100 signs, it seemed to Perrin, and Moraine knew them all. Lan rarely came back except when they made camp to confer with Moraine quietly, away from the fire. When the sun rose, most often he was hours gone already. Moraine was always first into the saddle after him, while the eastern sky was just turning pink. The Aes Sedai would not have climbed down from Aldeeb, her white mare, until full dark or later, except that Lan refused to track further once the light began to fail. "We'll go even slower if a horse breaks a leg," the warder would tell Moraine when she complained. Her reply was always very much the same.
"If you cannot move any faster than this, perhaps I should send you off to Myrella before you get any older. Well, perhaps that can wait, but you must move us faster."
She half sounded as if the threat were irritated truth, half as if she were making a joke. There was something of a threat in it, or maybe a warning, Perrin was sure, from the way Lan's mouth tightened, even when she smiled afterwards and reached up to pat his shoulder soothingly.
"Who is Myrella?"
Perrin asked suspiciously the first time it happened. Loyal shook his head, murmuring something about unpleasant things happening to those who pried into Aes Sedai affairs. The Ogier's hairy fetlocked horse was as tall and heavy as a Durin stallion, but with Loyal's long legs dangling to either side, the animal looked undersized, like a large pony. Moraine gave an amused, secretive smile.
"Just a green sister. Someone to whom Lan must one day deliver a package for safekeeping."
"No day soon," Lan said,
and surprisingly, there was open anger in his voice.
"Never, if I can help it." "You will outlive me long, Moraine Aes Sedai."
She has too many secrets, Perrin thought, but asked no more about a subject that could crack the warder's iron self-control. The Aes Sedai had a blanket-wrapped bundle tied behind her saddle. The dragon banner. Perrin was uneasy about having it with them, but Moraine had neither asked his opinion nor listened when he offered it. Not that anyone was likely to recognize it if he saw it, yet he hoped she was as good at keeping secrets from other people as she was at keeping them from him. In the beginning, at least, it was a boring journey. One cloud-capped mountain was very much like another, one pass little different from the next. Supper was usually rabbit, dropped by stones from Perrin's sling. He did not have so many arrows as to risk shooting at rabbits in that rocky country. Breakfast was cold rabbit, more often than not, and the midday meal the same, eaten in the saddle. Sometimes when they camped near a stream, and there was still light enough to see, he and Loyal caught mountain trout, lying on their bellies, hands elbow deep in the cold water, tickling the green-backed fish out from under the rock ledges where they hid. Loyal's fingers, big as they were even more deft at it than Perrin's. Once, 3 days after setting out, Moraine joined them, stretching herself out on the stream side and undoing rows of pearl buttons to roll up her sleeves as she asked how the thing was done. Perrin exchanged surprised looks with Loyal. The Ogier shrugged.
"It is not that hard, really," Perrin told her. "Just bring your hand up from behind the fish and underneath, as if you're trying to tickle its belly. Then you pull it out. It takes practice, though. You might not catch anything the first few times you try.
I tried for days before I ever caught anything, Loyal added.
He was already easing his huge hands into the water, careful to keep his shadow from scaring the fish.
As difficult as that, Moraine murmured.
Her hands slipped into the water, and a moment later came out with a splash, holding a fat trout that thrashed the surface. She laughed with delight as she tossed it up onto the bank. Perrin blinked at the big fish flopping in the fading sunlight. It must have weighed at least 5 pounds.
You were very lucky, he said. Trout that size don't often shelter under a ledge this small. We'll have to move upstream a bit. It will be dark before any of them settle under this ledge again.
Is that so? Moraine said. You two go ahead. I think I will just try here again.
Perrin hesitated a moment before moving up the bank to another overhang. She was up to something, but he could not imagine what. That troubled him. Belly down and careful not to let his shadow fall on the water, he peered over the edge. Half a dozen slender shapes hung suspended in the water, barely moving a fin to hold their places. All of them together would not weigh as much as Moraine's fish, he decided with a sigh. If they were lucky, he and Loyal might take two apiece, but the shadows of trees in the far bank already stretched across the water. Whatever they caught now would be it, and Loyal's appetite was big enough by itself to swallow those four, and most of the bigger fish, too. Loyal's hands were already easing up behind one of the trout. Before Perrin could even slide his hands into the water, Moraine gave a shout.
Three should be enough, I think. The last two are bigger than the first.
Perrin gave Loyal a startled look.
She can't have.
The Ogier straightened, sending the small trout scattering.
She is Aes Sedai, he said simply.
Sure enough, when they returned to Moraine, three big trout lay on the bank. She was already buttoning her sleeves up again. Perrin thought about reminding her that whoever took the fish was supposed to clean them too, but just at that moment she caught his eye. There was no particular expression on her smooth face, but her dark eyes did not waver, and they appeared to know what he was going to say, and to have dismissed it out of hand already. When she turned away, it seemed somehow too late to say anything. Muttering to himself, Perrin pulled out his belt knife and set to gutting and heading. All of a sudden, she's forgotten about sharing the chores, it seems. I suppose she'll want us to do the cooking as well, and the cleaning up after.
No doubt she will,
Loyal said, without pausing over the fish he was working on.
She is Aes Sedai.
I seem to remember hearing that somewhere. Perrin's knife ripped into the fish. The Shinarans might have been willing to run around fetching and carrying for her, but there are only four of us now. We should keep on turn and turn about. It's only fair. Loyal gave a great snort of laughter.
I doubt she sees it that way. First she had to put up with Rand arguing with her all the time, and now you're ready to take over for him. As a rule, Aes Sedai do not let anyone argue with them. I expect she means to have us back in the habit of doing what she says by the time we reach the first village.
A good habit to be in, Lan said, throwing back his cloak. In the fading light he had appeared out of nowhere. Perrin nearly fell over from surprise, and Loyal's ears went stiff with shock. Neither of them had heard the warder's step. A habit you should never have lost, Lan added, then strode off toward Moraine and the horses. His boots barely made a sound, even on that rocky ground, and once he was a few paces away, the cloak hanging down his back gave him the uneasy appearance of a disembodied head and arms drifting up from the stream.
We need her to find Rand, Perrin said softly, but I am not going to let her shape my life any more.
He went back to his cleaning vigorously.
He meant to keep that promise, he really did, but during the days that followed, in some way he did not quite understand, he found that he and Loyal were doing the cooking and the cleaning up and any other little chore that Moraine thought of. He even discovered that somehow or other he had taken over tending Uldeeb every night, unsaddling the mare and rubbing her down while Moraine settled herself, apparently deep in thought. Loyal gave in to it as inevitable, but not Perrin. He tried refusing, resisting. But it was hard to resist when she made a reasonable suggestion, and a small one at that. Only there was always another suggestion behind it, as reasonable and small as the first, and then another.
The simple force of her presence, the strength of her gaze, made it difficult to protest. Her dark eyes would catch his at the moment he opened his mouth. A lift of her eyebrow to suggest he was being rude, a surprised widening of her eyes, that he could object to so small a request, a level stare that held in it everything that was Aes Sedai, all these things could make him hesitate. And once he hesitated, there was never any recovering lost ground. He accused her of using the one power on him, though he did not really think that was it, and she told him not to be a fool. He began to feel like a piece of iron trying to stop a smith from hammering it into a scythe. The mountains of mist gave way abruptly to the forested foothills of Gilidan, to land that seemed all up and down, but never very high. Deer, which in the mountains had often watched them warily, as if uncertain what a man was, began to bound away, white tails flickering, at the first sight of the horses. Even Perrin now caught only the faintest glimpses of the gray-striped mountain cats that seemed to fade away like smoke. They were coming into the lands of men. Lan stopped wearing his color-shifting cloak and began riding back to the rest of them more often, telling them what lay ahead. In many places the trees had all been cut down. Soon fields encircled by rough stone walls and farmers plowing round the sides of hills were common sights, if not exactly frequent, along with lines of people moving across the plowed ground, sowing seed from sacks slung from their shoulders. Scattered farmhouses and barns of gray stone sat on hilltops and ridges. The wolves should not have been there. Wolves avoided places where men were, but Perrin could still sense them, an unseen screen and escort ringing the mounted party. Impatience filled him, impatience to reach a village or a town, any place where there were enough men to make the wolves go away. A day after sighting the first field, just as the sun touched the horizon behind them, they came to the village of Jara, not far north of the border with Amadisia.